I'm Stargate Pioneer from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the GunnaGeek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I'm the chief editor tonight. My name is SP. And your other reporters on this episode 190 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Damn, haircut. You had balls.
Especially when you're stealing candy for an alien. And Michelle.
I can knock this place off with a water pistol.
Mick has all the best quotes, especially the one talking about how he was going to get paid to fall into Ray's arms. This podcast is recorded on Sunday, March 18th, 2018, live via Geeks.live.
That's right, SP, and this evening we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow as opposed to our normal Arrow rundown. We'll also be bringing up news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that could and very well will impact future episodes of the CW superhero shows. That includes such things as Constantine, Black Lightning, Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, and I'm sure there's something I'm going to forget.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. I think we're ready to get into this episode of Legends of Tomorrow, so Michelle, why don't you go ahead and break down the episode?
This episode is called Phone Home. It's Season 3, Episode 4 of Legends of Tomorrow. It originally aired Tuesday, October 31st, 2017. It's directed by Kevin Mock. Directing credits include 3 episodes of Legends, 1 Chuck, and 3 Heart of Dixie. Written by Matthew Mala. Matthew was an assistant on 31 episodes of Legends and has written 7 episodes of Legends.
So basically, he's been there since the beginning.
Yes, this is someone they've groomed in-house, and he graduated.
That's done graduated, as we call it, down on the farm. This episode of Phone Home was aired, as Michelle said, way back in October, actually on Halloween, October 31st, 2017. In that week of October and November, there were 4 DC CW comic book shows. And it started with Supergirl with the 3rd season episode 4 called The Faithful to a total rating of 2.96. And Tuesday, The Flash aired the 4th episode of the 4th season entitled Elongated Journey into Night to a total rating of 3.79. Over on Thursday, Arrow aired the 4th episode of the 6th season entitled Reversal to a total rating, the weakest of the bunch so far, at 2.23, but still above 2, which this season is good for Arrow. And on Tuesday, following The Flash, Legends Tomorrow, this very episode that we're talking about today, aired the 4th episode of the 3rd season titled Phone Home to a total rating of 2.42, which does indeed beat out Arrow. So this was when the ratings were all above 2, guys.
The good old days, as we call them.
Well, this is total, you know, live plus 7 and such.
So the actual live rating might have been underneath 2. I get it. We just need to clarify that to the listener every single time, because usually when we talk about an episode the week that it airs, it's just the live rating. We don't talk about the live plus 7. So this is the live plus 7 for all 4 shows.
And still Arrow is the last of the bunch.
That's saying something. Now, Arrow is alone on Thursday. It had changed. It had swapped nights this season, right, into Thursday. So this was a result of that. And I believe this was just a month into the season with the 4th episode. So it's just getting into the swing of things, unfortunately. All right. So that is the ratings. We're going to get into the actual episode now. So Michelle, what's with the title, Phone Home?
Well, this episode is basically a remake of E.T. the Extraterrestrial Phone Home is a famous line from that film. E.T. was originally released in 1982. Chris, were you even alive then?
I was negative 2 years old in 1982.
Oh my God, really? I feel so old. I saw this in the theater.
Well, if it helps, I saw it in the theater too, just when they reissued it a few different times.
I saw it in the theater with my parents.
Okay, I'm old. I get it.
Sorry.
Did you go by yourself, SP? Were you old enough to go to the movies by yourself when this came out? Or
I don't think I was going to movies by myself back then. I think it was with a group of friends. I go to the movies myself now just because a lot of times I don't have time to make a quote-unquote play date with anybody. So back then, yeah, I probably went with some friends. I think probably my friend Brian might have been the one that I saw this with.
Well, it's an amazing movie directed by Steven Spielberg and written by Melissa Matheson. It's a classic. And this episode takes place in 1988 in Ray's hometown of Ivytown. And it actually takes place over October 30th and 31st. And well, how do we feel about how well did this episode basically remake E.T.? SP?
You know how they had that love letter to Star Wars the last season? I think this was a love letter to E.T. And I think they're doing a good job of doing these actual episode love letters to these great past IPs, intellectual properties, franchises, so on and so forth. They didn't go after Steven Spielberg. They went specifically after the actual movie of E.T. And of course, you get the iconic bike riding scene at the end. And I was wondering how they could get away with it, because I'm pretty sure that is copyrighted and trademarked by Amblin Entertainment or whoever owns it now. I actually don't know. But then you get the silhouette of Ray at the same time. At no point in time do you get the full moon and the two bicycles. I pause the scene, I watch the graphic, and you get Ray as the Atom flying alongside both the bicycles. So I think that's what it made it okay. Aside from that, the rest of it, the little Dominator is not just this little docile thing. The Dominator actually has some power. So there's a little give and take, a little horror thrown into this. But on the whole part, with the DeLorean, the mom thing, which is kind of creepy and weird at some points, it all spoke 80s to me.
It had a very 80s vibe.
Which is good since it took place in 1988.
Exactly.
Late 80s, yeah. And the big hair, the costumes and stuff like that. I like the 80s. And 1988 was actually a pretty decent year. So it's all good to me. I didn't own a DeLorean back then. I don't even think I knew what a DeLorean. I think the first time I saw a DeLorean was in the Back to the Future.
Same with me. In fact, I didn't think they were real cars when I saw Back to the Future. I thought they were just made up by Hollywood.
Kind of looks like it, doesn't it?
So, Chris, what were some of your favorite moments from the show that paid tribute to E.T.?
I don't know. There's too much I liked. I'm trying to think.
The candy?
Yeah, the candy's probably my favorite, but they didn't do Reese Pieces or anything like that, which would have been too close on the nose. That was what I was kind of hoping for in it, but of course, you don't want to do that because Reese's isn't paying you. Which brings up the story of how Reese's got involved in E.T., but that's for another show, I'm sure.
You know, I loved it right from the beginning where you get the halls lined in the white plastic with young Ray running along, and then you get the government guys with the walkie-talkies, which that's like basically the end of the movie. I just kept smiling over and over and over again during this episode because I thought it was really sweet.
Did they CGI out the guns here and replace them with walkie-talkies like they did in the recent update of E.T.?
No.
That's all I could think when they had that.
They actually had guns because this is the same government entity that we've run into before.
Right.
So we actually meet young Ray. SP, what do you think of Ray as a little boy?
Pretty much the same as adult Ray. I mean, he had some issue. I mean, he actually stole some stuff for the alien, but it was all for science, right? In his mind. So it was all fine. His memory of his youth is skewed because he thought he had a bunch of friends and they were just a bunch of bullies. So there's that. But I mean, Ray himself, the situation might be different, but Ray himself really hasn't changed all that much, at least in my opinion. Do you disagree?
He's still the basic, earnest, well-meaning kid. He just grew up and is an adult now. I think very much he's that same kid.
Last week we met Sari, and the episode begins with Ray doing a team-building exercise. And we learn that first the legends have been trapped on the ship for a while. We learn that there's one bathroom. I feel for them with the one bathroom situation.
Even smaller naval vessels of the smaller size has more than one head, because that's what they call them, head on a naval vessel. But one bathroom on they can't take part of the workout room and make it a shower or something?
Maybe Gideon doesn't have plans for that.
You'd need a plumber, I guess. Jefferson's a mechanic, not a plumber.
Ah.
And Gideon can't do everything. I mean, she's maker of clothes and healer of broken necks and mind things. I guess plumbing is just out of her league. She just can't do it.
I guess if you get any amount of people together that long that is subjected to one bathroom, I guarantee you they will start thinking about how to add an extra bathroom.
Yeah, that would be good. I mean, especially when you just consider the fact of, I'm told if you've got to do your hair and stuff like that, that takes time. I mean, I don't know much about that. I don't have much. But there are times when you're going to need to spend a little bit of time in the bathroom. And what happens if you go and you're time traveling and you end up in like ancient feudal times and try the food and it doesn't agree with you? Having one bathroom seems like bad news. I'm being serious. I'm not trying to make a poo joke or anything.
I'm thinking maybe they have pots in their room or something. I don't know.
Chamber pots.
Oh my gosh.
Ew.
Oh, now. That is just gross.
Think of the possibilities in low gravity, too.
Oh. Sorry, I got a mental picture.
I know. It's like even the International Space Station has ways of putting like the suction things and stuff. I'm surprised they didn't do anything like that where you sit on the, and it's like a suction, a vacuum thing, right?
Maybe. I don't think the writers knew what they were doing when they said, okay, let's just give the ship one bathroom. I mean, yes, it's not meant to crew this many people, but around the cockpit area, there are guest seats. I mean, you'd want at least two, in my opinion, for that many people. At least two. And maybe this is a failure on the showrunner. I don't know. Two bathrooms on a ship that size. That's what you need. Two.
Exactly. Well, Ray is doing this exercise first to pass the time and also to get Sari getting to know the crew a little bit more. And there's this great moment where Mick and Ray tells Mick, we could do a trust fall. And Chris, what happens when Mick does the trust fall?
Ray fades away temporarily and Mick goes thwack and hits the ground.
Ray better be dead.
You know, if Mick was mad at me, I'd probably hope I was too, because Mick would fix that real quick if I wasn't dead.
He would. I mean, they're a team, but you don't do that to other team members. Because Mick never goes after him. I think the only thing that saves Ray is immediately Sarah's like, where'd Ray go? I mean, immediately. So Mick was not of any delusion what happened. Ray disappeared.
And Ray did die for a moment.
It was a temporary thing, but yeah, he was out of existence.
Okay, I have a little beef with that, because should events like that be set in stone that quickly? Because usually they're not, and then they went back in time and then Ray was there, even though he died 2 days later. I guess it was a nice visual trick, but if you start thinking about the time travel consequences and how they are defined already on this show, I don't think he should have disappeared.
I wonder if it's because it was the creation of an anachronism, that it wasn't so much a, like, that's what happened. Because he didn't die then, and the baby Dominator wasn't there. And it wasn't so much of, like, the time travel thing, but it's more of, like, the creation of the anachronism. And that's what caused it, more like a hiccup when it was created.
I like the term hiccup. I was going to call it a time hiccup myself.
I missed it. Somebody explain to me why this appeared all this. So why did the Dominator and the Baby Dominator, why was that anachronism caused? What caused that to happen?
The Baby Dominator kills him was the inference, I believe, at some point.
So how did the Baby Dominator get there in the first place? What changed in order to make that happen?
They broke time at the end of season 2, I think, is partly what caused a lot of this stuff. That's fallout from that is where they broke things. And
that's fine, because Martin Stein at the beginning does the overview and or the intro and the voiceover, and he says that we broke time. You know, we saved the world twice, but does anybody care about that? No, we broke time and we have to fix it. Okay, I'll go with that.
They broke time real bad, guys.
Real, real bad. It just gets worse. In order to save Rey, adult Rey and Zari team up. And Chris, what did you think of their pairing during this episode?
They've got good banter. I enjoy banter. And there's one thing we learned about Zari throughout this. She banters quite well. We've learned that throughout the season. And there's another episode we'll get to later where you have like the time loop episode where she has a great moments with Nate. So I like the repartee or whatever, the back and forth that she gets with folks. And overly earnest Rey, of course, makes it fun.
SP?
Yeah, the two of them make an interesting pair. You know, normally I would say Mick and Rey are the pair out there, but since Zari's on the team, I can see those two being together. Now, Rey is firm in not wanting to cause any hiccups in time and relationships. So even though Zari's from the future, I don't think that there is ever going to be a ship in that direction with those two characters, which I think is important to mention, because you can just have teammates that are of the opposite sex and you don't have to have romance.
Agreed.
And I think I really enjoyed how they work together. Now, she is a little bit bothered by different events. Like, I can't believe we're doing this sort of thing, or I'm going to kill that kid if he doesn't get killed himself. But she does handle things and she's on the ball. And I think she's a good counter to Rey, because Rey is the complete Boy Scout and she's a survivalist. Now, remember where she comes from in 2042, right? She comes from a world that is completely locked down for metas, and she's had to survive a long time through her own superhero skills, the totem, and her hacking skills. So she's a little bit more rough around the edges than the rest of the team, aside from Mick, probably. And I think that's important to note when you're pairing her up with the Boy Scout.
That's fair.
There's a moment when adult Rey hears his mom talk about her concerns. And for a moment, adult Rey is like upset, and he doesn't, I don't know, he kind of falls off the positivity track for a little bit.
Yeah, he does, because all of a sudden he's seen the truth from his mom, who he's never really received that before. When you meet your parents as an adult versus as a kid, I mean, of course, the relationship grows over time, so you don't really notice the differences. But as an adult, you have a different relationship with your parents than you do as a kid. And to hear the concerns as a parent of a child versus a parent of an adult child, I think you're going to understand that there's way differences. I mean, as a parent myself, if I'm talking to other parents and we're talking about just different idiosyncrasies of our kids, that could be harsh if it was overheard by our kids. It's not really meant for their ears, but sometimes you just need to bounce stuff off of each other, that sort of thing. And that's exactly what she was doing. She said, I'm a little worried about him because he's not a normal kid, you know, normal, like go to baseball practice and get in a little trouble, that sort of thing. He's a Boy Scout. And he's very much a nerd. It's a little different. And I think she's a little out of her element in trying to guide him.
That's true. I mean, yeah, I get it.
But I like what Zari says to young Rey at the end. I mean, SP, you make a great point. She's rough around the edges. She's a survivalist. And then at the end, she's telling him that eventually you will find your people.
Right. This was out in Halloween night, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she was saying that, and everybody was around him, including older Ray. And that's a little bit odd to be face to face with older you and not know it. And just think older you is an adult and it's still you. But everybody that he becomes friends with, quote unquote friends, because the team is a bunch of friends at this point in time, I would have to argue. She's telling him, don't worry about it, kid. We got you covered in the future, without saying we got you covered in the future.
Yeah. It gives a nice little reassurance for a kid who felt he doesn't have a place in that world in his time. Because one thing we did learn is young Ray, while he might be positive and optimistic and things like that, he doesn't really fit in. And I think he realizes that, too.
Yeah. Chris, at the end, because it's Halloween, the team gets to go out in their gear, and then they're out with Ray. So we have adult Ray with Ray. Ray basically dressed as, like, the adult costume and stuff. Do you think they flashed young Ray?
I hope so. If they didn't, it could explain the design of the Adam suit that Ray makes when we fast forward to Arrow, why he's inspired to make it look the way he does. I mean, we're kind of in temporal paradox land here. If you start going in like Star Trek territory of which happened first here, did Ray create the Adam suit and then go back in time? Or did he come back in time and inspire and then cause the Adam suit to be created and look like that? It's the area of sci-fi that makes me scratch my head.
I don't think that they flashy thing him because I don't know what the flashy thing he does to young minds, first of all. So we really haven't used it on kids before. And then kids are kids, right? So you never remember completely what happened when you were a kid. So, traumatic events, yes. And this was a traumatic event. So I don't know how vivid his memory is going to be of it. But I don't see them flashy thinging him. And this could be something that they bring back later.
It could be. I mean, they could always go back to November 1st and say, oh, we forgot to flash Ray and we need to fix it so it doesn't screw up the timeline, because you would think the Time Bureau would be like, what just happened here? You guys went back and saw yourself and changed your own history, potentially.
Have any of you guys seen Singing in the Rain?
Ages ago.
Yeah, that was long, long time ago. But it's an iconic scene that they're pulling off there. It's the group thing in the rain. So yeah, I remember it.
Do you think it's the greatest musical ever made?
No.
No, Fiddler is. Sorry.
I don't know what it is about the stupid musical. South Pacific just is... Maybe it's because I've seen it the most, is the one that I tend to gravitate to as quote-unquote best, but I'm not a critic of musicals, so it's just my opinion.
I thought it was adorable that the little baby Dominator, who's named Gumball, gets the government goons to perform Good Morning to get them to escape. I thought that was so cute.
It was. And it proved that not all Dominators are bent on world or galactic domination, that there's some good heart in them or whatever. And it shows creativity too, by the way. And if I was subjected to watch that film over and over, maybe. Oh, by the way, Sound of Music is another big one. I mean, we could go on and on, but yeah, there are a lot of good musicals in our history in the last 100 years.
So, Chris, when Ray had to say goodbye to Gumball, was there dust in the room?
No, but I'm unfeeling at times. I felt sad, but I was like, oh, man. But at the same time, we've met the Dominators. I don't care how well you might get on with a young baby Dominator. We know the potential of what they can do. So I was like, yeah, he's probably dodging a bullet, ensuring that, you know, he doesn't get killed accidentally. I mean, imagine a baby Dominator temper tantrum as he gets into, like, the terrible twos and things like that. There's a lot of possibilities of badness.
Indeed. That's just not going to end well if you keep baby Dominator around. Baby Dominator needs his mom. And that's the thing with E.T. too, by the way. E.T., for those that have never seen the movie, E.T., they're time travelers themselves. They time travel forward to go through an entire history of a planet, and they do horticulturists,
I think so.
They're plant people, and they're trying to document the evolution of plants on a planet, and they go forward like 5, 10, 15,000 years, spend a couple of days, they grab samples, and then they go forward in the future. Combined with their time travel ability is a long life ability. The problem is it's not long enough to go and live on the planet from one time that the ship is there to the next time. And quite frankly, it's not their environment either. So E.T. needs to go home to his people. That's the whole thing there. And I think the Dominator, Baby Dominator, is in the same boat. Baby Dominator is just not going to survive on Earth very well on its own. It's going to either cause some sort of event or is going to die because of our inability to care for its health, or it's going to be used as a science experiment. So none of that is going to end well for anybody.
But I thought it was a tender moment seeing young Ray, because it was his first friend. That's what he says. You're my first friend. And he has to say goodbye to his first friend.
Well, that happens to everybody, right? Our first friend's an alien, right?
Not in my case.
Oh, okay.
So, Chris, we had a B storyline that involved Mick, Jax, and Stein. What was going along there?
Keeping the secret. That's what this one is. The professor's all excited because he's got a grandson coming from his anachronism daughter at one point in time, and they're setting it up so that he can go back and celebrate with the fam.
He is keeping this secret so well that he's deleting the travel logs from the little ship that they have. And he's got a secret communication device. And remember, at this point in time of the season, they're thinking that somebody's ratting them out to the Time Bureau. And then they focus in on Stein because of all these secrets. And then he's like, no, dudes, I'm just trying to see the birth of my grandson. And they're like, oh, yeah. We've taken so much away from you. We need to help you to do this. Fortunately, it caused a little strife with their plan because the little shuttle isn't there anymore for Sarah to use. But Stein does see the birth of his baby. They go see Lily. And I think it's especially touching that the grandson's name is Ronnie. Of course, that's the original Firestorm half, Ronnie. So I thought that was great.
And it does set in motion the whole we need to break up Firestorm plot thread, which we all thought would end a little differently. We talked about it in the crossover episode for Crisis on Earth X, but this is what puts in motion Jax being like, okay, I need to let Gray get home to his family. Let's find a way so that we can be split successfully. And this is now, for the next few episodes, the quest for how to break up Firestorm.
You know, we see growth in Mick because Mick, even though it was his idea to steal the Wave Rider, he did leave a note.
And they even signed it, too. It wasn't like a blind theft. They were like, oh, we'll be back, guys. Sorry. Yeah, that's true.
So because this episode was about Ray, we really didn't get to see Sarah be a captain, but she did do some captain-y things. SP, how do you think she did this episode as a captain?
I think she did pretty well. I mean, they cased out the joint, meaning Ray's house, pretty well at the beginning. They had a plan. Part of her team went off the plan, and I think there were some legitimate reasons for that. But they recovered nicely. And, oh, by the way, she knew she needed to take care of Mama Dominator. And that was her focus. And I think she did pretty well at that, knowing that there was no other help around right then. She knew that she was the team's best chance of taking out a Dominator one-on-one. That was interesting. I think from that aspect, I think her captaining was good. It wasn't really controlling the team per se, but she did put minor pieces of the plan in motion, like go to the house, make sure mom's okay, that sort of thing. So I think she did okay. I mean, if you're asking me to rate her, you're right. She didn't do too many captainy things, so I won't rate her incredibly high, but it's not incredibly bad either. At least it's somewhere between a 7 and an 8 for me. I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
I think that's fair. I mean, you got to keep in mind her crew basically ran amok for a good part of this episode without much guidance or without being reined in at one point in time. So there is partly that to consider.
I loved at the end when Zari asked Ray, does all of your missions go this bad? And at first he's trying to think, oh no. And then eventually, Yeah, they do go this bad.
They screw it up and then they fix it. Wouldn't be an episode of Legends of Tomorrow if that wasn't the case.
Exactly.
Must be Tuesday in the time stream.
Chris, is there anything else about this episode you want to talk about?
I can't think of anything. I'm looking through the notes right now to see if there's anything that pops out at me, but I think I'm good.
SP?
I like the scene. Remember, this is a point where Amaya and Nate are not reconciled at all, and they are still trying to live with each other again after breaking up, pretty much. And the scene where Nate is, quote unquote, making out with Mama Ray, it turns out to be the Dominator. But she came in and she was completely taking on that Dominator herself with her totem power. I think that was an interesting part of the episode. Like, it was Amaya doing it just because they needed to fix the mission, or was she doing it because she didn't want Nate kissing anybody? That's a good question.
Good point.
Dominator is a mind controlling entity bent on destruction.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. No.
So I'm thinking she went in to protect Nate.
Okay, but the question is why? I mean, what really motivated her? Yes, protecting him, but was there a secondary motivator as well? I think yes is the answer, but just was it acknowledged?
Well, I thought this episode was really cute. I like seeing young Ray and how he's been that positive boy. I love the callback to Camelot. Last season, if you remember, they had that Camelot episode, and when he runs away, he runs into the forest, and his little tent hideout is called Camelot.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Zari, you know, calls him Sir Galahad, which, you know, it's a great callback to last season.
Because Ray knew Camelot. He put his foot down and said he knew Camelot more than anybody else.
Exactly.
Yep.
This was a very cute episode. Next time, Arrow's not coming back until the 29th, so we are going to cover another Legends episode next week, and it's going to be Return of the Mac. It's Season 3, Episode 5. This one's not so cute. It originally aired Tuesday, November 7th, 2017. The Legends run into Rip in 1897 London, where they attempt to hunt down a time-traveling vampire. Directed by Alexandra LaRoche, writers Graeme Godfrey and Morgan Faust.
It'd be an interesting one. I did enjoy this episode. So Legends of Tomorrow is by far my favorite this year in 2017, 2018 TV time. So looking forward to seeing the next one next week. It's a bonus for us because we get two in a row here. All right. And if that's everything, we're going to move on into the news. Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of Starling Tribune Tower, it's the weekly news roundup with chief news anchor Michelle Ealy. And now, Michelle Ealy.
Thank you, SP. First bit of news is about the 44th Annual Saturn Award nominations. The Saturn Awards, the Academy was founded in 1972 by noted film historian Dr. Donald A. Reed to honor and recognize films often overlooked by mainstream awards. So this includes like genres like science fiction, fantasy, and action. Well, the nominations were announced, and for Best Superhero Television Series, Arrow, Black Lightning, The Flash, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Gotham, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Supergirl. It's basically the entire CW superhero lineup, plus a couple of other shows.
Yeah, Gotham and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm going to speculate here right now, just seeing that list right now, and I'm going to say it's either going to be Gotham or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'll tend towards Gotham just because it's got more play right now.
Chris, you want to make a prediction?
Ooh, certainly not going to be Arrow. I don't know. I like the Gotham thing. That's out of nowhere, and people have been talking about it. It's been out for a while, and there's probably some recognition people are wanting to give to it. I'll go Gotham.
I mean, it's Batman. I mean, it's not Batman, but it's Batman. So I just tend to think it's got an in. You know, it's interesting. We don't get The Gifted on here. We don't get Legion. So there are some shows that I would think might fit in here that are not. I mean, it's just the network TV shows.
I don't know, but I know it's from February to February. So, yeah, I don't know why The Gifted wasn't. The Gifted was good.
Legion should be on there. Yeah.
Yeah, Legion should, because it's a total mind bender.
Yeah. Out of this list, I'm actually going to say Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it is having one of the best seasons that it's ever had. So I know we are a DC podcast, but can't deny how good this year's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is.
I agree with you, Michelle. I'm just worried that the general public won't really see that, that they'll see Batman Gotham as being the big thing. Because, well, heck, it's on Fox, and they must have a hit there over on the Fox. I think the CW shows are going to be ignored. So I think it is going to be Fox or ABC's shows that get the win here. I don't know.
Well, other notable nominations, Best Actress on a Television Series, Melissa Benoist got nominated for Supergirl. Best Supporting Actress on a Television Series, Odette Annabelle for Supergirl and Candace Patton for The Flash. And Candace Patton deserves it, so I hope she wins. And the awards show will take place in June in 2018.
So we will tell you in June or July, when the episode comes out that we record, who wins these.
Next bit of news is our finale dates for our shows. So DC's Legends of Tomorrow will close out its third season on April 9th. Black Lightning will finish its first season on April 17th. May 17th, Arrow will end its current season, and The Flash will close out its fourth year on May 22nd.
Yeah, and we still don't have that end of season or end of year for Supergirl yet, which will be sometime in June as well. So, okay, April and May. Going to get pretty sparse in DC.
It sure will.
Well, that's our specific Arrow news. I'm going to move into some general DC news and got a couple of interesting news bits. Chris, why don't you start us off about Teen Titans Go?
So Teen Titans Go, a cartoon series, there's some pretty cool casting happening. I don't know. Do you guys remember, was it in the mid-late 90s, maybe the early 2000s, it all blurs together, when there was talk of a Nicolas Cage Superman movie directed by Tim Burton?
Yeah, I've even seen him in costume.
Yeah, we saw the costume leaks and stuff like that. It didn't look good. But Nick Cage, huge Superman fan, if I recall correctly, I think he even named his son Kal-El at one point in time, I'd heard. I have to go and fact check that on the internet chat room. Please feel free to fact check me on that one. But he's finally getting his chance to be Superman now. Nicolas Cage is voicing the comic book icon Superman in Teen Titans Go. He's joined by singer-songwriter Halsey, who will co-star as Wonder Woman, and rapper Lil Yachty will play Green Lantern in the upcoming animated movie that will take the young heroes of the Cartoon Network show Teen Titans Go to the big screen. So congratulations, Nicolas Cage, for getting to fulfill, I guess, a lifelong dream to be Superman.
Well, Ben Affleck got to be Batman, so I don't see...
And Daredevil.
Right, true. But, I mean, he always wanted to be Batman. He didn't necessarily want to be Daredevil. So if Nicolas Cage wants to be Superman, he should be Superman.
I was happy to hear that. You know, it would have been interesting to see him as Superman. Because sometimes it's one of those, what would it have been like films? Tim Burton, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Would have been out there.
So once this come out, we all need to go see it and then do a podcast on it. And then I can redirect my domain, gotitanspodcast.com, to that specific episode.
There you go. I like this plan.
Good plan. Our last bit of news is about a new film from DC, Ava DuVernay. She's done A Wrinkle in Time and Selma. She will make her superhero debut with an adaptation of Jack Kirby's epic, The New Gods. Set after Ragnarok and the birth of a generation of gods, The New Gods was part of Jack Kirby's fourth world cycle of storytelling, along with Mr. Miracle and the Forever People. The story pits the evil gods of Apocalypse, led by Darkseid, against the bright and idealistic gods of New Genesis, led by Highfather. Mr. Miracle is the son of Highfather, who was raised on Apocalypse as a kind of mutually assured destruction pact with Darkseid, who sent his son Orion to be raised on New Genesis. Miracle is perhaps the most remarkable of all the New Gods characters, along with his wife, Big Barda, and Orion himself. So Ava has got a lot of stuff to work with, but Big Barda has to be in it. And Gwendolyn Christie as Big Barda, I am on board with.
Yeah, that could be pretty cool.
Is this a live-action film?
Yes.
Wow. I'm impressed. I haven't heard of this yet.
Yeah, and there's a writer attached to it. So it could be maybe 2020.
Hmm. Interesting. This is going to be a Warner Brothers production?
Yep. All part of the DC Cinematic Universe was my understanding from what I'd read up on it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like another pocket in the DC Cinematic Universe. It's not exactly tied to like Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman used Steppenwolf, which is also from the fourth world. So they're thinking that they might not use Steppenwolf, or if they do, it's going to be a different version because Wonder Woman used it. But it's right now, it's not supposed to be connected to it. Again, it's DC doing these pocket things here and there because they went the anti-Marvel hashtag it's all connected route.
I could poke holes into that, but I won't, just because Marvel, who's a much better organized organization, they're having trouble with the hashtag it's all connected sort of thing. So it's hard for me to say it's the wrong thing. Of course, I want to see everything in the same universe, but is that even possible anymore? I don't know. So I'll just let that one go. I think actually Disney's going to have that problem with two of its properties, because I think eventually Star Wars, they're going to run into the same issues with that as well, if they keep on churning out as much content as they have been across TV and film as the property moves forward in Disney. So just stay tuned and what happens to all that.
I think the biggest problem with trying to connect all these things anymore is when Marvel started doing it, everyone was like, oh, that's a cute idea. They're going to try and connect all these things. And they had the luxury of time because they were one of the first to try and do it. And now everyone that tries to do it, they're like, oh, Marvel's already doing that. So they feel like they have to try and compete with Marvel right off the bat on these connected universes. And we haven't seen it happen. They tried to do like the Universal Movie Monster Universe with that Mummy movie. And Mummy movie wasn't good, and they'd had these grand plans, and they just backed off all of them and said, nope, this connected universe not happening. So if you're going to do it, you've got to grow it the right way. And maybe this is the right way now with DC, of taking some of these chances on these side projects, having minimal links together and growing something together that way.
Well, I look forward to it. I really hope this happens. You know, I like the fact that even though A Wrinkle in Time stumbled, she is given this chance because she is a very good filmmaker, and she's going to get a ton of money again to make a movie. And I just think it's going to be interesting.
I agree.
Especially if Big Barda is in it. I think that's like right now, everyone is like, Big Barda must be in it.
I have not seen A Wrinkle in Time, so I'm not going to make any judgments on the film itself, but I will say that it's sandwiched in between some major motion pictures. I think even Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, whatever they're calling that movie, I forget the title of it, I think that's going to have some problems as well, because it's smashed in between Black Panther and Ready Player One, and then Avengers Infinity War. I think those will be the three bigger ones in the spring here as you get into the summer. And I think A Wrinkle in Time, it was just wrong timing coming after Black Panther. And that's unfortunate, but when you have hundreds really of movies that come out every year versus a couple of dozen that used to come out 30 years ago every year, yeah, you're gonna see some of that, and it's unfortunate, but maybe it will live as a cult icon in DVD sales or something like that. We'll see.
Well, and it's Disney, if I recall correctly, so I'm sure that there's going to be DVD pushes, DVD sale pushes and things like that. You find a lot of these movies nowadays, if they don't do great in the theaters, the second life in DVD sales, Blu-ray sales, whatever, can be pretty good for some of them. Remember, some movies that people love to this day, like The Big Lebowski and things like that, didn't do great in theaters, but then got their second wind in DVD sales and then became cult classics and favorites. So who knows? Maybe this will be the route.
Disney's had issues with movies before that kind of tanked in the theater. John Carter is one of them.
Oh, that was bad.
The Lone Ranger. They've had faults and they couldn't make it up in DVD sales. So I'm hoping that's not the case for this. Like I said, I haven't seen it in a theater. I've had some personal things come up and haven't been able to make it there. I've wanted to, but I can see why other people aren't, because this is the NCAA tournament. I mean, Chris, even you kind of focused on basketball this weekend, right?
Oh yeah. And I'm going to be focusing on it in 2.5 hours. I think it is next game.
Yeah, are you going to work tomorrow?
Oh, I have to go to work tomorrow. I've got meetings. I have meetings at 9 a.m. So despite the fact that tip-off's not until 9:40 p.m. Eastern time for two schools from the state of West Virginia and the Eastern Coast, I will be going. The entire state of West Virginia will probably be shut down tomorrow as we all recuperate.
Anyway, my point is I could see why A Wrinkle in Time kind of stumbled, and I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to whether the film is good or not, but I'm not going to pin that on her. I'm going to pin that on timing right now until I see the movie.
Well, that's all I have for news this week. Now, if you want to listen to other podcasts about other geeky things, we are part of a network. And Chris, what is one of the podcasts that we have on the network?
That's right. Like Michelle was saying, we are part of a network of shows that you can find over at GonnaGeek.com. There's a lot of shows in the network, 25 plus. We can't take the time to run down what's going on in each show each week. That would be pretty much the length of this show to do that. But what we can do is give you a little taste of what's going on in one of these programs and say, hey, you guys might want to go check this out. And this week we're talking about episode 49 of the Game Life Balance US podcast, where they ask, is Super Metroid a perfect video game? Cody poses the question and John tries to come up with answers as they review the classic Nintendo title on the SNES Classic 24 years after it was released. So you guys can go check that out over at GonnaGeek.com. Click on the Game Life Balance US logo and you can find out more about Cody and John's experiences on one of the great classic games of all time, Super Metroid. It is one of the best of all time, by the way, guy.
Even though it came out 24 years ago, I still have not played it.
You should pick it up. It's a great one. I'm sure Cody and John agree with me.
Well, I'll ask you this. If I'm playing a game, should I play that or should I play Mass Effect?
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect.
Okay, there you go. Mass Effect it is.
That's easy. That's not even a challenge right there, SP.
I'll still listen to the podcast, though.
That's a fair point. But looking at the time, it is time for us to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to anyone who did tune in live and watch us as we recorded this episode over on Geeks.live. Don't forget, you can download the audio version from our website, startingtribune.com, or catch a replay of the video version over at youtube.com/GonnaGeek.
Remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays and join our live chat room.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Time Machine.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Ray's Mom.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag Gideon, you need to be a plumber. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.